Hello, welcome to another episode of the Failery Podcast, where we turn the metaphorical lamp over to the darker side of founders' journey to get to where they are and discuss previous projects and companies to shed light on illuminating insights that you can apply to your business today. I am Brandon Hondoko, and on this episode, I'm very excited to be joined by Brian Ray, the current founder of Project Headlamp, a feedback tool for remote teams to foster internal connection and support. Prior to this, though, Brian has already amassed an extremely entrepreneurial journey that all started off with a kick-ass portfolio website and a cold email to the legendary Brad Feld. This led him to his time at Mocavo, a company that eventually exits with him at Chief Product Officer, and then to Binox, a personal search engine for all of a user's files that they have in the cloud. Along with these awesome anecdotes from his journey in the Denver startup ecosystem, Brian and I discussed his experience going from a large acquisition to the founding team of a new company, his take on the future of remote work and the idea of the necessary tools required to enable it that often is alluded to in online discussions, and why you might miss that one person in your office who always brings tuna to work. Sit tight, get a notebook ready, and thank you for listening. This podcast wouldn't be possible without the help of our friends over at Referral Hero, the all-in-one platform to design and run flexible referral programs that grow your bottom line. If you're tired of wasting money on Facebook ads or writing tons of content that never rank on Google but already have loyal customers, you should definitely try a referral program. The Dollar Flight Club grew its business by 13%, and Holiday Pirates added 300,000 emails in less than a month after setting up their referral programs. The best thing about all of this is that you can get started in minutes with their no-code widgets, and if you sign up today, you can get 20% off with the code FAILERY20. Try it now for 14 days without any cost at referralhero.com. Once again, that's referralhero.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Failery Podcast, your one-stop shop for failed ventures, failed founders, but more importantly, the lessons you can learn from them. My name is Brandon Hondoko, and today I'm super excited to have Brian Ray on the podcast. Hello, Brian.
How's it going?
It's going good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. That's a pretty funny intro there.
I wrote it myself. Thank you. Yeah. But yeah, Brian is the current founder at Project Headlamp, and he previously head of product and user experience at Binox. Is that correct?
We called it Binox internally, but 50% of the people we introduced it to called it Binox. I think it just depends. I think it just depends on how you refer to binoculars.
Sure.
Yeah.
But yeah. And you were also previously the CPO at Mocavo that got acquired in July 2014.
Yep.
But yeah, I'd love to just, you know, scale back because you have like lots of these like great experiences that I want to dive into.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd love to just scale back and go back to hirebrianray.com. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that was the most wild experience. So this is like summer of 2012. And my wife and I were living in the Dallas area in Texas. And I was working for myself, a freelance developer, doing A-OK, you know, enjoying life. And business was good, trucking along. But the thing is that we would always vacation in Colorado. And our idea of a trip, of a vacation, was to go to a national park. And, you know, several years before 2012, we had let it enter our minds, you know, like, what if we were to move? Like, what if we, and we kind of tested the waters, and there was actually a job offer or two, but they just didn't feel right. So we said, okay, let's put that on pause. Let's hunker down for a little bit. And then our son, our third child, our son was born in May of 2012. And no sooner had we gotten home from the hospital than we kind of looked at each other and kind of grinned and said, so Colorado? And so, you know, I was working on cover letters and doing job applications, like doing the whole, you know, the whole rigmarole, the whole thing. And one day it just kind of hit me as like, you know, forget this. I'm going to build a website. It's going to be hirebrianray.com. And what I'll do is I'll make it this funny story about how hot it is in Texas and how much we love Colorado. And oh, also I'm good at websites. So hey, can you...
Just like, by the way, right?
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. Like, and by the way, I can build websites. And the site itself, you know, was the portfolio. Like at the time, parallax scrolling was the hot thing. And like it had, you know, some jokes in it. It was like, you know, without sounding braggy, like it was entertaining, you know, just to scroll through and look at. And it had like some work on it. And so just totally on a like whim, or as one of multiple things, I sent an email to Brad Feld, B. Feld, on Twitter, who's like the godfather of startups in Boulder. and was like, hey, Brad, like total shot in the dark here, but you know, I would love to move to Boulder. I think if you were to tweet, someone in Boulder should hire BrianRay.com, it'll happen. Thanks so much. Love your work, whatever, you know, and forgot about it. Completely forgot about it until like a weekish or so later. For the first time, I got up in the middle of the night to feed our son. And I don't know, man, it's like 1 a.m. or 3 a.m., like something in the middle of the night. And so I'm getting ready to sit down at the, you know, kitchen table and give him his bottle. And I open up my iPad and like the notification pill is red and it's like 100 and something. And I'm like, oh, shoot, what happened? And I scroll all the way to the bottom and it's an email back to me from Brad saying, tweet it, good luck. And so all those emails were just like people emailing me, hey, mm-hmm. we're not in Boulder, but we're in New York. Hey, have you considered Toronto? Hey, we're in Boulder. You should talk to us. Like all these just outright offers. It was bonkers, dude. So for the next 2 weeks, I just spent a bunch of time interviewing with companies. And the funny thing was the interview process became me interviewing them. Like, this is not a brag. Like, this is like in the total, you know, lesson of positioning to try to like flip things around and just change the balance of power was so bizarre. And nothing I had experienced, you know, before or since to that degree, but to be able to see so clearly, okay, when you can create a sense of like FOMO on the other side, like you suddenly have the advantage. And it was bizarre. It was bizarre. Lots of lessons, meta lessons learned from that entire experience. But yeah, it was through that that I joined Mocavo, a Techstars and Foundry-backed company in Boulder, and just had the time of my life there.
Yeah, wow. Thank you so much for sharing. I was saying, like, I fired up the Wayback Machine, Fred, and like, it definitely, you know, I had like results from like 2012, 2000. I think like I was saying, it definitely looks much, you know, much more fun than, you know, everyone's resume is like to an extent looking just black and white, and like no one has fun in these things. You know, it's very, very facade, very professionalism.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you so much. So funny to pull it up in the Wayback Machine. Yeah, it was on trend for 2012. Like the typography and the style, like it looks like 2012 if you see it today. But I have taken it. It's archived now, but whatever.
Absolutely. But yeah, this is like a good segue into Mocavo, right?
Yeah.
This was a company to, like, their mission was to consolidate all of the world's genealogical content into like just like online. So you chose there because specifically it was like out of Boulder?
Well, I mean, there were a number of options that were in Boulder. What attracted me to that company was not only that, you know, all of the other, you know, requirements were checked off, but this company in particular had a product vision that I could get behind. And the idea is like, I mean, in the United States, Ancestry.com is the 800-pound gorilla in the market. They own the market. And their business model is to put a walled garden around all of their content. And if you want to see the good stuff, then you got to pay a subscription fee. Well, Mocavo's, you know, thesis was over time, information wants to be free. And so Ancestry's business model is susceptible to disruption, and for a number of different reasons. And so what we ought to do is, instead of charging for content, let's let content be free and let's put our subscription service on top of advanced tools and
features
and things of that nature. And so there was, you know, in my interview with them, with the CTO, Richard Miller, who remains a very close friend of mine, I was just so struck and inspired by the vision that he cast and that the CEO was leading. Like, there were other companies who offered more money, who, you know, had some better things in terms of like materials, but the vision that they put forward was something that I felt like I could really invest in and get behind. And that's why I ended up there. I mean, I was hired just as like, you know, JavaScript, you know, person, like front end dev. And over a couple of, you know, over the years with them, was super fortunate to get promoted up to head of product. And it was a heck of a ride, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I can assume. I mean, what I'm trying to get at here is like, you know, you go from front end dev to, and like, you know, this whole story of like Brad just like tweeting your, you know, just like shot in the dark out. I guess like, if I'm not prying here, like, I'm just curious, like, how did you get into, you know, like front end dev? And like, how did like, you know, despite Brad's tweet, like, why do you think people wanted to hire you besides like, you know, the portfolio?
Well, the thing that I think worked so well in that situation and how I was able to get promoted into that leadership position is that Something that I think I can fairly say about myself is that I am one of those people whose resume does not reflect, and again, like, not trying to brag, just like that my resume does not reflect what I bring to an organization. I didn't go to the right school. Like, I went to a commuter school in Nowhere, Texas. My degree is a Bachelor of Art education. Like, I didn't go to Stanford. I don't have a CS degree. I didn't start off at the right startup and then, you know, grow with it to many hundreds and like some, like, you know, millions of dollar things, whatever, on the resume. So if that's not true, if you can't win on your resume, then don't play that game. Do not play the resume game. Elevate your skills. And one of the skills that people tell me I have is that I'm a good communicator and tell a good story. And so that's what I tried to roll into that site is, yeah, I am not going to mention my college. I am not going to mention the previous companies I've worked for because they're not super relevant. I am going to simply demonstrate to you that I can think creatively and that I can put together a pitch. Here it is. And it worked. And so then when I got my foot in the door and was just like one front-end developer among a number of them, over time, you know, those opportunities to be the person to pitch, to tell a story, to engage with customers, to cast a vision, those opportunities present themselves in a more natural context than a paragraph on a sheet of paper. So
no, yeah, absolutely. I love that. And like, you know, those qualities like definitely shown for sure, because like you eventually became head of product or like CPO. And then this also like rolled into Mocavo, eventually getting acquired by Find My Past for a good sum of money.
A good chunk of money, which was, you know, the validation of the work that we had done. And again, like more fantastic opportunities for me to have the experience of demoing to our board members, pitching, demoing to our eventual acquirers, being in those situations. I mean, they purchased, you know, the company as a direct foothold into the American market to try to take on Ancestry and pulled in, you know, a number of our technologies and our content. And so, yeah, that's where that story went.
Yeah, absolutely. Congratulations on that. I know it's been a while, but and then that was June of 2015. And then that rolled over into Binox, where you were head of product and UX. So yeah, I like to play this game with lots of the founders I interview. But if you're explaining to your kids, right, what your company is, or like if you had to explain to a 10-year-old what Binox did, what would you say?
Binox was a single search engine for all of your cloud documents. And so you would be able to connect your G Drive, Dropbox, Slack, Evernote at the time, everything. And we would give you a single search interface to find anything you were looking for. Yeah. So the acquisition of Mocavo was meaningful. Like it was a, you know, a nice little blip on our family's financial, you know, financial forecast. But I went to work the next day. It wasn't, it was not like, and so continued on there. Binox was the CEO of Mocavo and I like working on this company together, which came out of, you know, our sense at Mocavo where we put so much of our effort into its search capabilities. You know, we were searching hundreds of millions of genealogically relevant documents. And we were always like, man, I wish I had Mocavo for my stuff. And so that's kind of where the germ of that idea came from. Well, I mean, I guess I'll just kind of go ahead and start getting into it, is that it was extremely difficult on the technical implementation side, where, and like on the backend side, which is my co-founder Cliff, his specialty. And my focus is on the front end and on UX. And so, you know, as I'm working on trying to design and put together, you know, a beautiful user experience to present everything, a huge struggle that we, you know, just continued to run into was how challenging it was to process. It wasn't difficult to store because storage is cheap and like you just throw something somewhere and then retrieve it. But to be able to process this fire hydrant of content, it was very difficult to keep the services from falling all over themselves and extremely expensive as well. And so those were the challenges that we just continued to run into.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for being vulnerable. I'd love to just, you know, take a step back here, but like you know, I love this, or like this phrase that you said about like you just, even though, you know, you guys got acquired in Mercado, you went to work the next day, right? I guess I'm just curious, like, what is it like going from, you know, a team or like a company that just like experienced a large acquisition to like building a new company with like someone who was previously on Mercado? Like, I guess, you know, what was the day-to-day like? What was like, you know, the office banter like?
Well, so the first thing is that I need to mention is that, you know, after the acquisition, I nearly said serve out, but I did have to stay with the acquiring company for a year.
Yeah.
That dynamic changed dramatically. And so I was hopeful that to hop, you know, to go back to the scrappy, you know, startup, like two-person kind of vibe, that it would be a huge breath of fresh air. What ended up being a huge challenge is that because we were so early and because we were having a difficult time finding product traction, it's difficult for us to feel like we were firing on all cylinders and doing our best work and bringing out the best in each other. And so, you know, the other thing is that we worked as a remote team. We did not have an office and we were fully remote, even though we, for the most part, you know, for most of that time we were living in the same city, we worked remotely. And we did not practice being a good remote team. And that is as much a skill as any other management skill that you need to learn and flex. And so the typical challenges that remote teams face, we faced them in spades. And so like miscommunication, just dialing in asynchronous communication, and, you know, being able to not block one another despite not being next to each other, to be able to talk it through, and a handful of others. And so, you know, ultimately we eventually hired another previous coworker to help out with some business development and research development. And despite all the technical issues and the technical challenges that the company faced, ultimately we had to shut it down because of interpersonal impasses and conflicts, which we've, you know, thankfully have since repaired. But it has to be acknowledged that those impasses that we developed were in large part responsible for the dismantling of the company.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I hope this is not like too big of a tangent, but just like, you know, on the topic of, I guess, you know, internal impasses, right? I just wanted to, you know, ask if, I guess, like, what I'm curious about is, like, I want to know, like, what the ecosystem was like, or, like, when you were saying before that Mercado, like, at Mercado, you guys, you were like, oh, I wish there was, like, a Mercado for me, right? I'm just curious, like, was this more so, like, I assume this, like, solved your guys' problem, like, Binox was something you guys wanted to build for yourselves, but was this something you know, validated that other people would like?
Yes. I mean, we certainly had plenty of problem validation. And for what it's worth, I mean, there's a company called FYI right now, founded by Heaton Shaw, you know, and Marie Prokopetz, and they're working on this. And so whether or not it's them, you know, chances are decent that with Heaton's resources, they'll be able to pull it off. But if not them, somebody. Like, this is most definitely a problem. And it will be a persistent problem, because, you know, each of those cloud services have an incentive to remain siloed. Slack wants you to put everything in Slack. Dropbox wants you to put everything in Dropbox. Yeah. And so sitting across the top of that entire ecosystem is going to play to somebody's advantage. And so is what you're asking, like, what was the culture of product discovery and customer discovery? Or what was the ecosystem of communication and sharing of ideas and trying out new things? What more can I talk to you about?
No, absolutely. I think like what I was trying to get at was like, I guess figuring out whether or not you guys were, you know, too early for your time.
Yeah. Okay. In retrospect, what we should have done, and I haven't like seen behind the scenes to tell if this is what FYI is doing or not, but it sure seems like it with the way that they describe their security layer. What we should have done is not tried to process, analyze, and OCR all of the content and store it. We should have just provided as seamless an experience of hitting each of those individual search APIs. It would have been easier to execute. It would have been cheaper to execute. What would not have done is delivered relevant search results. Search relevancy and weighting was really, really important to us, because we knew that it was important from Mercado, that what you put up at number 1, 2, and 3 is extremely important based, you know, in terms of how much your customer's willing to trust you. And our hypothesis was, if they don't feel like they can trust that we're delivering the best results, then they're not going to return to us. And so we have to process them. We have to process every document and be able to like interleave the search relevance. If you're just hitting multiple APIs and then interleaving them randomly or only sorting them by service, like you can't deliver as relevant results. Now, that may still be true. It doesn't matter. What was more true is that we would not be able to deliver on the product we were trying to build. And so that coupled with, you know, our internal conflicts is why we ultimately returned what money we had in the bank to our investors as a sign of, you know, goodwill. And this probably isn't our last rodeo. And so, and we went on our way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just like, you know, like when I heard you or like when we were talking previously about Binox, like it really just like struck me as like something that's been, or a startup that's been like very, very hot in conversations, at least like for me personally, is called Command E, which is like a, you know, cloud searching productivity shortcut that people, you know, use. Press Command E and you can search through like, you know, Dropbox, whether that be Google Drive, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess like from that, you know, like on the tangent of like being too early or like, and I know like at one point, like I was just like searching you guys up and like you, I guess the pressure of like launching and like just like really getting, you know, search and waiting down, like you guys were like featured on Product Hunt and like I think Ryan Hoover tweeted out. Yeah. So I guess on that topic, you know, like I'm just curious, like would you build Binox there? Like, do you think, you know, is there a space for Binox to exist? Do you think like the problem of like, you know, siloed information has been solved? I don't know if you're too familiar with like Command E, like what they're trying to get at, you know, like
I haven't heard of that one specifically, but the closest thing that I've seen to Binox is for sure FYI. And I strongly believe that somebody will do this. I don't think that we were too early. I don't think that's why we failed. We didn't need like a technical consultant. We needed a marriage counselor. And that would have given us a bit more time to work through our technical issues. And so, yeah, I mean, I'll check out. Is it Command E or B?
Command E.
Got it. All right, cool. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And take a look at FYI. It's usefyi.com.
For sure. And I guess, yeah, you've talked about it, you know, like lots of interpersonal, and you eventually return money to like your investors after like 2 years of operations. And then, you know, moving forward from this, I guess, where were you? You know, like, I know this is like a super late question to ask, but like, did you ever know, you know, you were going to be a founder? Or like, did you ever know you were going to, I guess, be on the founding team of a startup? And, you know, what was your experience? I guess like your first experience at Binox, like, did you know you were going to be a repeat founder is what I'm trying to ask? Like,
I don't know. So my mom and dad owned their own business when I was a little kid. And so the idea, like, that you would start a mail order computer repair business from a desk in your bedroom and eventually a large table in the kitchen, eventually take over the garage and then eventually move into an office and build a new building in our little town. Like, that's what my mom and dad did with their business. And so just the idea that you can be an entrepreneur and work for yourself just was supernatural, or was very natural to me as a kid. And like looking back, like I was definitely the, you know, 16-year-old who like had a garage band and was, you know, I was building our website and we were getting our own shirts printed and, you know, selling them at school, that sort of thing. That was just like, yeah, that's, of course you would do that. That's what you do. And when I did like quit a salaried position for the first time and go to work for myself, it was like, on the one hand, it was a little bit scary, but I just also believed that it would work. I believed that I could do it. And was, you know, super huge fan of 37 Signals and Red Getting Real, and was like, man, these guys are totally doing it. Like, yeah, the idea of a SaaS company, and that sounds awesome. Work for yourself, doing software, cool. And like, you know, solving problems for the Fortune 5 million, not the Fortune 100. Like, that sounds great. And so that always appealed to me. And then, you know, it just happens that, you know, my wife and I really wanted to move to Colorado. I happen to be good with computers, and Boulder is a startup mecca. And so it just fit. And yeah, so that's where it's gone. Yeah, what an interesting, I don't know the answer specifically to that question.
Sure.
When did I realize, oh, you're going to continue to join or start companies for yourself? Yeah, semi-recently, although it has felt natural the whole time.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, absolutely. And then, so, you know, this was September of 2017, you know, you guys, Binox, parted ways. And then, I guess, how did you go from, you know, Binox to Project Headlamp, or like where you're at right now?
Well, so Project Headlamp is extremely new. But so when we disbanded, I knew that I did not want to go just get a salary job, you know, at some established company. I also knew that I just didn't have it in me to join, to try to like get a product role at an existing startup. Just didn't have it in me, energy wise. And so I talked it over with my wife and was like, you know, let me see if I can take this experience. I've got a background like with design chops, development, and some product leadership expertise. I think that I can kind of take that, you know, Swiss Army knife around and build a consulting business out of this, you know? And she's like, okay, let's see what it does. The entire time, like the primary objective was do consulting to pay the bills so that on the side, I can work on a side project and grow it up. That has been virtually impossible. That has been so, so difficult. And just, you know, stage of life and just personal willingness to work, you know, 65 or 70 hour weeks in exchange for missing my kids, like important events. No, I'm not going to do it. And if that means that I can't do it, okay, then I won't. And so that has been, you know, the story for these, you know, 2.5 years. It's been really challenging to find time to build up a side project. The traction that I've started to find recently has been around my own experiences of working remotely. The root cause of Binox's miscommunication and dysfunction and ultimate like dismantling comes from not being good at working remotely. My personal experience as a solo consultant, solo founder, the challenges of working remotely. And so I've just started to talk about that publicly and talk to and interview founders of highly effective remote teams. And doing the research there and sharing that is starting to get some traction. And so I was like, okay, I just need to put a name on this thing so that it has somewhere to live. And so that is what Headlamp is. Projectheadlamp.com is a place where, like, right now all that exists is a waiting list, a big old batch of like the best remote work resources that I have found, like curated, not just like all of the ones that you can find, because there's so much out there and it's just so much noise to signal, that I needed a place where I could go, where it's like, where was that article that I read? Okay, now it's on my site. And then the other thing I've published recently is the Joel test for remote teams. And so, which is like a take on, you know, the Joel test that Joel Spolsky wrote in like the year 2000, 12 questions you can ask yourself to whether or not you're a high quality engineering team. This is 11 questions you can ask yourself to determine if you're a highly effective remote team. And so it's all living there. I'm sorting through and trying to figure out, you know, what's the service and what's the product look like. And so it's a work in progress. It's still a journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's like super, super young. But, you know, I was like visiting the website and, you know, I love the description of, you don't want to, like, you know, you're like focused or like you're zen distracted by, you know, the shoulder tap or like the microwave tuna fish wrecking the office. You know, I'm just being like very, very like, this is my experience here, but I really didn't, you know, experience the like real friction that like remote teams really experienced until like last summer when I interned at a company where it was like, you know, they were like fully for this like remote equal. And like there was days where like they would close the office and like no one should, or like no one was allowed to come into the office because like you would have a day where like everyone was like fully remote. I guess, you know, like this has been a conversation, you know, in like my Twitter circles, or like this has been a conversation for a while now. But I guess, what is Project Headlamp trying to, I guess, achieve? You know what I mean? I assume, you know, like solving the friction that remote teams like experience. But I guess also, like, I want to tie that into, you know, the question of like, what you think from someone who's like experienced a lot of the friction that comes with like remote teams. What is the future of like remote work, I guess?
Yeah, there's a couple different questions in there. What do I think the future of remote work is? I mean, I think that the volume, like the raw number of individual humans who are working remotely is only going to go up. And not only the number of people, but the number of roles and job types. Like there are a whole batch of positions that are currently just inherently remote compatible. like engineering. We have been using repos for code for a while now. That's super mature. Project management, like it doesn't matter if you're sitting next to one another to be able to log in and use Basecamp or Trello. So those things are just inherently remote compatible. Some roles are remote friendly, but takes a little bit more work and a little bit more time. And so as time has moved on and more companies do, you know, start to see the benefits, then I think more and more companies and more even traditional companies, not software companies, will try to go remote for all of its great benefits. You can recruit from anywhere. Your employees are happier because they don't have to commute, and you save a huge expense on real estate. Like lots of benefits. Really cool. Thumbs up. The flip side to this is that I think that many of those people will experience even higher levels of loneliness and isolation than we currently do. It's already at epidemic levels in modern societies for a whole number of reasons. And the idea of now deliberately people will not even have the built-in social network of an office, that is going to have serious ramifications, in my opinion. It will not offset the benefits of remote work. Remote work, I think, is a net good. It's a net gain. However, I think that a lot of people are, I don't want to say unprepared, but I think that there's so much cheerleading and excitement around the benefits of it that a lot of companies and management teams are going to be caught off guard, because the first challenges that you face leading a remote team are not the first challenges that you face leading a co-located team. So that's the problem thing. On the solution side, you know, projectheadlamp.com is deliberately vague about its feature set.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I do not want to build a feature set yet. It could be an onboarding tool that keeps people from feeling isolated from the get-go and that communicates in the company handbook in an easy to consume way out of the gate. That's what it could be. It could be an employee engagement tool that does pulse surveys. Like,
yeah,
there's a batch of things. It could do all of them. So that's what I'm trying to. That's what I'm
absolutely
still teasing.
Yeah,
out. I'm starting.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't want the Failery podcast to be the place where you drop. Okay, projectheadlamp.com.
Yeah.
Is this like it? But yeah, absolutely. I think something that I just want to touch on here is there's a debate. I don't remember maybe 4 or 5 months ago on my Twitter feed, but people were talking about, you know, remote work is not propelled by necessary tools. You know, so people are saying Slack, Zoom, and Gusto are not going to cut it. I guess I want you your thoughts here. Do you think, software is the way to go, or software is the way to propel, this is the future of remote work. You know, this will solve loneliness. If you have, I forget, but my company was testing out this thing where there was it's basically Zoom, but on basically 24/7, the time, you guys are on your laptop, and there's custom interface built around your office. So you could move your chair towards where someone is sitting and
totally.
Hear their conversations.
Virtual office. Yeah.
Yeah.
Handful of virtual offices being built right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I'm just curious, would you say these things where it's Zoom and Slack are just being super, making you feel like you're in the office when you're not? Do you think the future of work is, going to be propelled by remote tools or the necessary tools you would need to share?
I think that those, and there are a handful that are being built by cool people, and I think that they will definitely be helpful. And they for sure serve a purpose. But in general, my belief is that the processes matter way more than the tools. And so a team that is struggling, that goes remote and finds that they're struggling with the setup, is not going to have that solved by any one magic bullet piece of software. Not at all. It will have to be solved by a handful of well-defined, agreed-upon principles around, here is how our company makes decisions. Here is how our company communicates. If you have this class of request, this is the tool you put it in. And it doesn't matter what you use for email. It doesn't matter what you use for chat. It doesn't matter. It's that if you have this sort of request, put it in this channel and expect a response in this amount of time. The processes are what matter. And so that's my fundamental belief.
No, yeah, absolutely. I love that. I mean, maybe one day when we get to software that can emulate the smell of microwave tuna fish wrecking the office, we'll be there.
I think one flaw that I see in those tools. And it's, again, it's not a criticism that they shouldn't be being built. They certainly will be helpful. But I think one flaw in them is that it sort of assumes that the way to solve the challenges that people experience when there is no office is to emulate the office. And I think that that can be helpful. It gives you a model that we understand, but it's probably not the underlying, you know, problem. It's a symptom. It's a symptom of it.
Yeah. And like, you know, this is a good segue into like, you know, your Joule test for remote teams. And this is like a 12-point like score for remote teams to like judge whether or not they're like, you know, good. And like, you know, a 9-point score is like adequate and like a 10-point score is good. That sounds correct, right?
So, well, yeah. So 11 questions. Sure. 11 questions, obviously. I mean, Laura Roeder of Meet Edgar was like, hey, I like this list. We do all of them. And I'm like, I believe that.
Sure.
Y'all have been at it for a while. You know what you're doing. If you're doing 10 of them, you are in good shape, well above average. If you're doing 9, you're still well above average, but chances are very, very good that if you fast forward and add a member or two, you're going to start experiencing some serious trouble. And so that may seem like a high bar, but it's really not. When you look at what it takes to get a yes on all of those, it's just simple matter of processes with commitment and follow through. Easier said than done, but that's what it means to be professional, I guess.
You know, I don't know if like this is something that like will hopefully, or like, I don't know if this like will be like successful, but I love to try this. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with, you know, Brian Chesky's, you know, 10-point or like 10-point experience, like 10-point check-in or 10-star experience for like Airbnb.
I haven't heard that.
So like the gist of it is like he says, you know, like a 5-star experience would be like you checking into your house and then, you know, your host would be there, give you the keys and then leave. And then like he just like keeps going, and like, you know, a 7-star experience would be like, you know, your host is like, oh, so you love surfing. So like, you know, I rented you a surfboard, you know, you can use my car, here are my keys, et cetera, et cetera. And then like 11-star is like, you like, you know, you land in the airport, it's like very, very Beatles circa like 1950, like there's a group of schoolgirls just like screaming your name. You know, you walk down, you get into like this limo, you move to the house, and like you check in, right? So, and then like, I guess his juxtaposition here is like, when you think of like the craziest experience you can get, like the, you know, the 11-star check-in, the, you know, the 6 or 7-star check-in doesn't seem so far away. Like of just like, if you just like, versus going to like, you know, getting a band of people and like getting a limousine together to get your people to check in versus just like knowing that they love surfing or like knowing that they, you know, like backpacking, it doesn't seem so crazy. So I'd love to try, like, you know, if that's a good explanation, I'd love to try this, you know, Brian Ray, what's a 5-point Joule score for remote teams? What's a, you know, 6-star Joule score for remote teams? And what's, you know, what's your 10-star remote check-in?
Interesting. Yeah, that's pretty good. I guess.
Yeah, I hate to put you on the spot here.
No, it's okay. No, this is really good. I'm really curious to see what my brain thinks when it's just on its feet here.
I was very, very excited for this question.
Yeah. Well, so let's just say the 5-star experience has to have a communications guide. Like, I'm coming to the conclusion, you know, because a few people now have asked me, like, which one is most important? And I'm starting to come to the conclusion that it's the communications guide. It just cuts, you know, expectations and assumptions off at the pass. So there we go for one. I'm going to say always turn video on for calls. Not necessarily saying it's number two, but it's probably going to be my top five. The amount of just you're losing like the intangible physical experience of a conversation when you work, you know, in different places. So let's not also get rid of just facial expressions and, you know, like knowing what somebody's looks like. That's huge. I'm then going to go to scheduling time for team socialization. It's the sort of thing that it happens passively and accidentally and just like through serendipity in the office. And I'm an introvert. And even as an introvert, I miss being around other people. And so it's the kind of thing where the other joke I make is like, you know, week one of working remotely, nobody's tapping me on the shoulder anymore. month five is, oh, nobody really taps me on the shoulder anymore. And so you have to literally plan, like you have to schedule socialization time. And like, because if you don't, then it's one of the first things that just gets passed by. And before long, like nobody actually even knows each other. So, and there are easy ways to do this. Okay. From there, I'm going to say company handbook. That's pretty tightly coupled with the communications guide. But the reason I put it there is like the handbook should have some degree of here is what to expect in your first day. Here's what to expect your first 5 days. Here's what to expect your first 30 and your first 90. Like laying that sort of thing out so that new hires know what to expect, who to ask if they're confused. You know, everybody has some degree of imposter syndrome just at a base level, let alone when you're brand new. You don't want like you don't want people to regret like making the decision on you. And so as much of that as you can empower and give them some autonomy to, you know, to master their new situation, that goes a long way. Oh man. And then I guess I'm probably going to say, you know, sharing working hours and normalizing ignoring notifications is probably the next important one. The likelihood that people are going to, you know, start to experience burnout over time is, you know, approaches 100%. And yeah, so.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How's that?
No, absolutely. That was great. So, you know, I'm assuming there's no The Beatles reference in your, you know, 10-star remote work team or remote work.
Wait, sorry. No. What's the? Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, gotcha.
No, absolutely.
But dropped the reference there.
No worries. Absolutely. I mean, I think like those are definitely, you know, things that like resonate with me. And like, I assume, you know, in the future of remote work, I would hope people, you know, get right for, I guess, like whether it be software, whether it be something. Yeah. And I guess, you know, this is like, you know, super early and like I don't want to, you know, like have you like always looking or always listening back to this podcast and being like, oh, what did I say for that answer? But like, what do you think are like, you know, where are you on like, you know, what's the 10x future? Like, what's the vision that you have for Headlamp?
Well, yeah, you've asked me at a good time because I feel like I'm at this crossroads with it where I have very deliberately stayed out of the solution space for a while. And however, it is feeling like it's at the point where, okay, I need to put something down and have a vision product-wise, have a product vision, a first thing in place to have something to kind of manipulate and so that it can react to customer feedback and it can react to the market. Right now, the whole thing just remains this like, you know, I've identified that companies are going to have this problem. I've also identified the common patterns and the ways to address them and solve them so that you're less likely than average to have that problem. Okay, how do you productize that? And so my vision for Headlamp is that it would be a right-sized, bootstrapped, profitable business that lets me and a handful of people I respect and admire, you know, do work that they can be proud of. It doesn't have to, you know, put a dent in the universe or,
no,
you know, or take over the world or, you know, anything like that. But, you know, the crossroads and the struggle that I'm at right now is like getting myself to come down on here. This is version one. This is it. And got a little bit of analysis paralysis on wanting to get it too right too soon, even though I know good and well that is a terrible position.
Like, yeah.
that's an awful position to take. I tell people this all the time. But when it comes to this right here, like I'm susceptible to a really common pattern that's starting to really get on my own nerves. So gotta jump over it.
No, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's like a sense of, you know, like personal attachment to like what you're building. But yeah, I mean, that's you've done a great job of like segueing into my next questions. I don't know if that's coincidental, but like, yeah, you've done a great job of that. I guess, you know, on the tangent of like you giving advice to like other people of like, you know, just like shipping version one, you know, being very, very lean with it. I guess what I want to ask here is like, you know, Brian today, right? You know, February 13th or something, February 13th, 2020. And I guess if you could talk to, you know, Brian circa 2016, you know, still in the trenches, you know, interpersonal impasses, et cetera, I guess, you know, and like, this is like, you know, like if you were talking to like any like early stage founder who's like, you know, it's not going well or it's like going super great, I guess what advice, you know, would you have for Brian in this position?
Okay. I'm trying to give advice to Brian in 2016.
Yeah. Like Brian circa 2016.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. Here's what I like about this question is I actually wish that Brian of 2016 could tell Brian of 2020, like, hey, man, enjoy the journey, like enjoy the struggle, like And so what I am going to say back to 2016 is there is no such thing as arrival. Like, you don't like suddenly get there and one day wake up and like everything is just as it ought to be. Because, you know, Brian of 2011 would look at 2016 and be like, we did it. Are you kidding me? We've done it. Which would suggest that I right now ought to like be experiencing no struggles, no inner turmoil. That is the farthest thing from the truth. I am still like in this, you know, wrestling match with wanting to do something great and put my name on it. And so actually I would tell 2016 going into Binox to don't try to grip on so tight. Like, don't try to hold with such ferocity. Be a bit more flexible. Go with the flow the way that you can. You're getting ready to not go with the flow as well as you typically do. So go with the flow a little bit more. See where things go. And so I think that that advice is not necessarily universal, but I do think that it's not overly prescriptive. That can be useful to founders in many different contexts is, hey, just analyze whether or not you're holding on a little too firmly. And in that posture, whether or not you're introducing more drama than is likely to lead to creative solutions, you know, just have some self-awareness. And so, yeah, like literally telling that to myself at this moment.
Sure. Yeah. Wow. That was awesome. You know, I felt like a, you know, third person, like just watching, you know, that was like very, very, you know, meta and like, you know, you reference, you know, Brian 2011, Brian 2016, I didn't even know where I was, you know, for a little bit. But yeah, I'd love to, you know, like just move on from this, like, just like super meta, but like, where can we find Brian 2020? Like, you know, is there any like, you know, Twitter you'd like to plug? Is there any,
sure,
anything you're working on besides, you know, projectheadlock.com, you know, sure, quick plug, Bright and Early podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can find me on Twitter at B-Rhea, B-R-H-E-A. Reach out. You know, hit me up if you have any questions at all. You can listen to my podcast, Bright and Early, brightandearlypodcast.com. So I talk to early stage founders like Ryan Singer, Natalie Nagel, Laura Roeder, mentioned Josh Pickford and Joel Gascoigne. So you can, you know, listen there and hopefully learn some things. My consulting work, you can learn a little bit about that at brianray.com. Design background, development chops, product experience, you know, kind of available to help out startups there. And of course, projectheadlamp.com. Go check it out. Get on the wait list. Stay up to date. And we'll see where this we'll see where this ride goes.
No, yeah. Good luck with everything. And you know, if any of our listeners, you know, want to send Brian, you know, a higher first name, last name.com, you know, circa 2012, please send that over. And I will definitely guarantee you, I will assure you, Brian has to retweet that or else, you know, this is oh gosh.
Yes, I would have to.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being on the podcast, Brian.
My pleasure.
I've had a great, great time. You know, I learned, you know, a lot about remote work, a lot about everything. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. That was another episode of the Failery Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We have a bunch of these coming out soon. Stick around. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Failery Podcast. I've been Brandon Hendoko, and once more, I'd like to thank our friends over at Referral Hero for making this podcast episode possible. If you're looking to grow your business organically through word of mouth, make sure to check out their tool that'll allow you to create and grow a referral program within minutes. More than 7,000 companies are using it already, generating over 30 million leads, and now you can get it too for 20% off with the code FAILERY20. Try it now for 14 days without any cost at referralhero.com.